This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. Going to talk a little bit of 9/11 here in a moment. Brandon Darby is going to join us half hour from now. Do a lot of gang talk, cartel talk, border talk, since that's in the news. And he always tells us stuff we didn't know before. That, some emails, the House of Representatives definitely about to screw us over. All that and so much more coming up this hour on the world famous Jesse Kelly Show. And a reminder to you, you can email me. We love your emails. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. Love, hate, death threats, it's all fine. Ask Dr. Jesse questions for Friday. Send in whatever you want. So set aside all the politics for a moment. And I thought it would probably be appropriate, because today is September 11th, to just talk about that day briefly, what that day was for me. I know we all have our own stories. If you're old enough, you remember, and you can remember details about that day. It's crazy. And I never really got when my folks or I would have uncles or someone who would talk about the JFK assassination, and they would talk about, I remember where I was. I was in school. I was working. And they would remember it. And until 9/11 happened, I didn't get that at all, because there have been huge events in my lifetime, huge events, but none of them stopped time, and none of them seared their way into my memory that I can tell you. I mean, I can remember, well, here's what I was doing. I was not one of those extremely brave souls who went to join the military after 9/11. I was already in. I had already joined. I joined in 2000, so I'd been in for a year. I was an infantry marine in 29 Palms, California, and we went on a long PT run that morning, just a long run, calisthenics, standard Marine Corps stuff. So there's stuff, nothing that would surprise you, but we're out running all over like we always did, and we got back to be, we were in front of our barracks. You know, the barracks, It's a dorm. Just think of it like a dorm. A lot crappier, but it's a dorm. So you all have rooms and you have roommates. It's the barracks. And we're in front of the barracks. That's where we stopped our run. And we're stretching, doing some exercises. And word came down, get up to your room now and turn on the television. Now, I'd been given a lot of orders since in my 1 year in the Marine Corps. Everyone was always ordering you to do something because you're not in charge of anything. I'd never been told to watch TV, but okay, we knew something was up, but we all ran up to the barracks. We're all sweaty, sandy, dirty, and we turned on the television. It was CNN, actually, and when we turned it on, they must have caught us right when it happened, because when we turned it on, only one tower had been hit. The second tower hadn't even been hit, and Maybe you were more in the know than we were at the time, but initially, we were very confused. We were confused about what had happened. We were confused why we needed to be in the barracks watching the television. Because to us, the prevailing theory in a room full of meathead Marines was, did somebody get drunk and fly their plane into a tower? You know, like a drunk driver, a drunk pilot? Hey, who's the moron who couldn't see the World Trade Center when he's in a plane? That was our first thought. And we're all talking, how could this have happened? You don't think, and terror attack was brought up. Someone said, no, that's got to be intentional. Yeah, I guess I could see that. But we didn't have any idea. We didn't have any idea. We were watching. And as we're watching it live, we watched live as that second airliner slammed into the second tower. Okay, well, obviously then we understood this was a coordinated terror attack. And I don't want to act like we were okay with it, because we were not. We were angry. Oh, screw these guys. I hope we hunt them down. We were angry, but it was certainly nothing visceral. It wasn't as bad as you would think now in hindsight, because the towers hadn't fallen yet. So to us, we're watching on the screen and we just see the Trade Center buildings. Both of them had big holes in them, and it's bad. And we know people are dead, obviously, and that's bad. We're mad about that. But nothing world-changing. And then the first tower fell. I'll never forget it as long as I live. The room was dead silent. We'd been talking the entire time, and the tower just fell. And you remember, if you've ever seen a video of it, which I'm sure everyone has by now, there was so much dust and smoke and debris as it fell. It was almost as if you're watching the top of the tower. Not almost, it was. You're watching the top of the tower, and there's this huge brown, gray smoke around it. And you just slowly watch the top of the tower sink down into the smoke, and you know it's gone. And we're mortified. Because everyone's doing the math in their head. How many freaking people just died in that tower? A lot. And we're confused. I don't understand. How did it fall? Which we know all that now. And then the second tower fell. And, you know, I'm not a much of a feely person. Just not big on that. It's not who I am, I guess. Probably how I was raised, whatever. I had tears coming down my face of rage. We wanted to kill somebody so bad that day. We wanted to kill everybody. They eventually were sitting there. We're taking it all in. What was her name? Paula Zahn, I think was her name. Paula Zahn was on CNN, blonde chick, and she was despondent, and she was bringing the news. And then eventually they said, hey, get down to battalion headquarters. Battalion commander wants to see you. So our entire battalion, we scramble. We get down to battalion headquarters, and he calls us all in, and he says, hey, I haven't been told anything about a deployment anywhere. I don't know where we're going. I don't know if we're going. I don't know what we're doing. But what I do know is be ready. Get yourself ready, because we might very well get a call to go somewhere after what happened today. And we wanted to so badly. It was all we wanted. Just let me kill somebody for this. And I know that sounds terrible. I don't give a crap how it sounds. That's how we felt. We were a bunch of young, patriotic Marines, and we wanted to go murder everyone who had anything to do with the thing. That's how we felt. That was our feeling of the day. And, of course, we didn't get that call. Not at first. Not for a while. Afghanistan kicked off. And remember, at the beginning of that, that was really the true best part of the global war on terror, because we were hunting Osama bin Laden. And anyone who did that to America, we used to do this kind of thing, should be hunted down and killed in their sleep. And that's what we were doing. In fact, we almost had him in Afghanistan. I won't go into all the details of that, but we sent CIA was there, Green Berets, all the super hot guys, you know, the BKs of the world. The BKs of the world, they were there trying to hunt down that guy and kill him. It wasn't for, okay, let me see, September 11, 2001. I think it was March of 2023, February or March of 2023 is when we declared war on Iraq, and that's when my unit went in. Now, we were in Kuwait before that, but it was not a couple years. It was a year and a half until we actually went somewhere. And I'll just never forget that day. And I know you have your own stories, felt like it was probably important on this day to tell mine. I will leave you with this. I'm not leaving you. We're going to keep talking about stuff. I want to talk about the mail-in stuff. We're going to just go back to Springfield. We're not going to let this stuff go. We have a couple other things we need to go into. But in New York City, they have created a 9/11 Memorial Museum. Now, you already know that I love New York City. Love you, WOR. But I love New York City. You already know that. But maybe you hate it. Maybe you have no use for the big city. You're worried about crime and all those things are valid. That's totally fine. You know how people say you should go to Washington, D.C. once to see the monuments and the memorials? And I agree with that. I agree. You should go visit. Don't stay. Give yourself 3-4 days. Go see it all and leave and don't come back. If you ever have the opportunity, I know money doesn't grow on trees, and I know New York City might not be right next to you. The 9/11 Memorial Museum is one of those things you should do. You should do. If you're in town for a wedding, for business, for take an hour, take two, and go to the 9/11 Memorial Museum. It is so well done. And if you have children who maybe are too young to understand the impact of this, as I do, my boys are 16 and 14. They weren't even alive then, or 16 and 15. Sorry, Luke. My boys are 16 and 15. What do they know about 9/11? They know about snarky jokes they see online. It's not real to them. And why would it be? They're too young. It was real to them by the time we walked out of that memorial. It was real to them. So just a little heads up. That's worth going to. Also, I made a horrible mistake on the show last night. I'll explain what mistake I made in a moment. Before I say that, let's talk about IFCJ, the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. I just want you to understand something. There are places in the world where you need a bulletproof ambulance to guarantee you can get from your home to the hospital. That's what it's like for people over there. You need an ambulance that can withstand AK-47 rounds so you can get to the hospital. And on October 7th, a lot of people died in ambulances. Those Hamas guys were killing everybody they could find. But a lot of ambulances were able to make it to the hospitals and save lives because they were armored. And how do you think they got those armored ambulances? The International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, the IFCJ. Go support them. Go stand in solidarity with them. Support IFCJ.org. It's all one word. Support IFCJ.org. We'll be back.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday, a hump day. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, on Spotify, on iTunes. Brandon Darby of the Cartel Chronicles joins us about 10 minutes from now. This Venezuelan gang. Are there other gangs? Are they merging or fighting with American gangs? We're going to talk to Brandon about all this stuff in about 10 minutes from now. I apparently screwed up big time last night on the show, and now I need to own it. I need to get it out there. I called my mother on the way home last night because it was my mother's birthday, and she appreciated the call. And then she asked me very pointedly, "Did you wish me happy birthday on your show?" I didn't hear it. So it's not funny, Chris. It's not funny. Mom was upset because mom did not get a shout out on the show. I made the terrible mistake of trying to explain to her that people probably care a little bit more about debate stuff and, you know, national security stuff. And I tried to baby step as best I could, explaining to her that her birthday isn't necessarily national news, not really something that matters to everybody, but she was not very receptive to that at all. She did not understand. So happy birthday, Mom. It's a day late, but I just want everyone to know it was my mom's birthday last night. Happy birthday, Mom. All right, there. I said it. We're good. Now, one last word on the 9/11 stuff. This is why I adore Tunnel to Towers so much. That, you know, that's when I talk to you all the time about Tunnel to Towers. You know, that's when they started. it couldn't possibly be more personal for the Siller family. They started Tunnel to Towers because, well, that's the day firemen and cops, first responders everywhere, ran into the danger and died. And they died in droves. One of the things you'll see at that 9/11 Memorial Museum, you'll see a million things there, but firehouses, there were pretty much entire firehouses were eliminated because everyone got on duty, strapped it on, charged in, and died. So we're talking firehouses that were just emptied. Cops, too. And Tunnel to Towers from that day has dedicated themselves to trying to care for those who are left behind. When a firefighter dies, when a cop dies, when a soldier dies, Tunnel to Towers has been there. And I just really appreciate this organization. I love them. I have always loved them. I've done events with them where they read the names of everyone who died in Iraq or Afghanistan. It's a wonderful organization that doesn't rip people off. I love them. And that's all I wanted to say. And you should support them. It's worthy of your support. The $11 a month, you've heard me say it a million times, $11 a month is what they ask for. T2T.org, T2T.org. So probably worth your time and certainly worth your money. They do amazing work. Enough of that. Enough of that for now. Thomas Massey, speaking of amazing, one of the really, really good people we have in Congress, Thomas Massey's getting us all prepped and ready for what I've already told you is coming.
Can we be honest with the American people about what's going on here? This is political theater. I'm going to call out both sides right here. It's all posturing. It's fake fighting. We all know where it ends up. This is Groundhog Day. I don't care if the Democrat is the speaker or Republican is the speaker. We always get a CR in September, and then we get an omnibus. Sometimes there's a twist on that. We might get the omnibus before Christmas, but if we're not good, it comes after Christmas. But that's what's going to happen. And in the meantime, it's political theater.
I don't want to bring you down, but they're going to pass a continuing resolution. Mike Johnson earlier today, he tabled it for now, so it won't happen this week. We'll deal with this next week, but Republicans are making a bunch of noise about the SAVE Act. That doesn't really do anything either. I want to remind you that a continuing resolution in and of itself is illegal. There should never be a continuing resolution. That is reserved for emergency purposes. We are in the middle of World War III. We don't have time for a budget fight. Just keep spending it. Congress has an obligation to come up with a budget and have a budget fight, one the public can see, one the public can argue over. And because none of these pieces of trash want to be held to account for what they're doing with your money, this is your money and your children's money, none of them want to be held to account for it. So now the CR, the continuing resolution, is just what they do every time. It's a way of saying, well, let's just keep doing what we were doing. Then you never have to be held account for the billions and for the trillions of dollars of your money the government is tearing through. And I just want to drive this point home, which you already know, but you have to get this through to Norm and Norma and pound and pound and don't stop pounding this point home. Every dime Washington spends now makes the cost of the things in your life go up. Another billion here, a $10 billion here, a $50 billion there. It's not just nothing. It's the reason you can't afford eggs. It's the reason you can't afford a house. It's the reason the value of your dollar continues to go down, down, down. Washington spending did that to you, and none of the people in charge want to do anything about it. That's a fact. And they're going to do the SAVE Act, as if the SAVE Act is even something you could implement. It's September 11th. The election is less than 2 months away. Ridiculous. And we won't get the SAVE Act anyway. Ridiculous. Mike Johnson's probably already grabbing his ankles, getting ready for the whole thing. Brandon Darby joins us to talk cartel stuff next.
Feeling a little stocky?
Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. I don't know who that band is, Chris. Did Darby pick that song? That's, that dude has a good voice. Joining me now, Breitbart Cartel Chronicles. You know he's your one-stop shop for everything. Border, cartel. And if you've been hearing the name Tren de Aragua in the news recently, guess where you heard it first? From Brandon Darby's mouth a long time ago. First of all, Brandon, what is that band? That dude sounded good.
It's a guy named Danzig, and it's from the '80s or the early '90s or something. And it just popped out of my mouth when he asked me what song I wanted. Usually he picks kind of gay '80s songs, and he picks them because he said it's what he likes to hear when I'm on air. So I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know, but that's okay. I support him. I don't care. It's all good. Like, it's not my business. You know, it's none of my business. But that's between him and God, him and whomever.
Yeah, no, Chris, you hear that? You love who you love. We're all with you, buddy. Anyway, Brandon, you're a much better person than I am, so I know you're not celebrating the fact that you called the whole Tren de Aragua thing, but it generally is bad for a nation to import an entire prison gang from another country, and it's not working out well for us.
It is not working out well, and I'm sad that I'm correct, that I was correct, but... you know, that's what we do, is we monitor transnational criminal organizations, and they started showing up. And once they started showing up in droves, we tried to alert the public and say, hey, these guys are coming. This is going to be a name that all of you will hear in the months to come. Give it 6 months and you're all going to hear this. And I think that was about right. And now they're all over the news. And I think it's quite concerning, but they're not the only criminal gang who's being imported into our country. You know, like when you have, you know, let's just be really clear what we're talking about. During the Biden administration, in the last 4 years, right, not even quite 4 years, they have had over 10 million people, right? We call them illegal aliens. I think migrant's a better term for some of them, illegal alien for others, depending on how they got here and what have you. They had over 10 million people show up at our border illicitly, with another 2 million that the U.S. government reports were gotaways, meaning that they have traces that they came or they saw them come in, but they couldn't get them. So we have 12 million people who have come across in this administration. That is a lot of people, man. And I am as sympathetic as the next guy to workers and to people I've, you know, worked with when I was a teenager who worked on farms or ranches in my case. I'm very sympathetic. I understand why they come. But here's the problem. Those kind of people who are good people are not the only ones coming, right? Let's be very clear. Even if the numbers hold true that 5% of any group, whether it's native born or people who show up illicitly across our border, are criminals, right? Which I think the number is actually higher. In that case, when it comes to people who show up illicitly across our border, are hardened criminals. Even that would mean that we have imported, hundreds of thousands of people into our country who are hardened criminals who should not be here. So despite the fact that millions of them might be nice people who are trying to work, and not that even if they are nice people trying to work, we have problems there too, right? Like the state of Texas and its public education system, it is the darndest thing I've ever heard. I will sit with liberal friends, some of whom are teachers, and they will talk about how there's not enough money in the public school system. They need more money in the public school system to properly educate kids. And in the same breath, they'll talk about the fact that it's okay that hundreds of thousands of students are showing up in the middle of the school year who are non-English speaking, right? Into our public school system. And it's like, well, you can't have both. Do we have the resources to help these hundreds of thousands of kids who are showing up in the middle of the school year from across our border, or do you not have enough money? Because if you do the math and you're intellectually consistent, you're admitting that we are taking away from the U.S. taxpayer and the Texan taxpayer. We are taking away from those kids' education to fund the educations of hundreds of thousands of people from other places. And that's, you know, things get dicey, very sympathetic. I understand why people come, but at the same time, let's be very clear. We have problems. That's too many people. I mean, this is out of control.
Speaking with Brandon Darby, Cartel Chronicles, Brandon, you mentioned Tren de Aragua. Obviously, they're all in the news now, even though I heard it from you first, but they're not the only one. Who are the others?
Oh, well, So in Venezuela, the way that Venezuela is kind of structured, when you go, I hate to get into the weeds with everybody.
Go ahead.
When Hugo Chavez took over and you had what they called the peaceful revolution, right? Chavez took over. He was this rabid leftist, military guy, Hugo Chavez. What his administration did was he basically took the dominant criminal groups, because those were also the revolutionary groups, right? There's that fine line between revolutionary and organized criminal. He took the dominant criminal groups in every Venezuelan state, and he basically organized them and brought them into his administration to help him run the barrios in those states. So that is how he kept order and enforced his will in these barrios, which comprise millions of people in each Venezuelan state. That is what he did. So each of those states, Tren de Aragua is just the dominant criminal group in Aragua, right? But we have other Venezuelan states, and those criminal groups are coming too. On top of that, we're still having MS-13 go back and forth. There's tons of what they call street gangs who are coming into this country. We have tons of them who are here. We have many that we, you know, with MS-13, remember, it was people who came here, and then as we deported them, they had become gang members here. And as we deported them, it spread the gangs back to their native countries, right, in Central America. So this illicit, you know, if you want people to come here and you want everyone in the world to be able to come here, then you need to campaign for laws that allow that to happen legally and legitimately. But you can't just say, you know, to hell with your laws, we're going to find end runs around it and just let everybody show up and stay. You can't do it. When you do it that way, you end up with what we're seeing. So tons of criminal groups are coming in, and it's very hard to keep up with. It's difficult to keep up with the sheer numbers of different gangs who have arrived in our country because of an unsecured and improperly secured border.
Brandon, why aren't they at war yet, or are they, and I just don't see it, with our homegrown criminal organizations, be it, I don't care what level of organized crime you want to go to, from the Italian mafia to the you name it, the Crips, I don't care who it is. Why are they not warring with each other? Because there's only so many drugs and prostitutes to go around.
Well, they actually are. So what we're seeing is we go to Chicago. This is something I started covering in, I think, 2010 or 2011. And what I was doing was I was just getting on Pacer, which is a site that you can download court transcripts and court documents, right, back in the past. And I would get there, and I would see some news release about gang members charged in Chicago for murder. And then I would read through the transcripts and all the court documents. It would take me a day or two, and usually 14 or 15, page 14 or 15 of transcripts or indictments, there would be some mention that they were acting at under the orders of someone, a criminal group in Mexico. And I'm like, how come that's not in the news, right? So I started writing about these groups. So what's going to happen is they're not going to take over and become challengers to, you know, various drug cartels from Mexico. What they're going to do is they're going to become allies. And we're going to have what we already have. We have some U.S. street gangs who are working or who are allied with Los Zetas or CDN. We have some who are allied with the Gulf Cartel. We have some who are allied with various factions of Sinaloa. And what we're going to see is Tren de Aragua ultimately start to ally with wherever they are. So what you'll have is you'll have some people in Tren de Aragua in California who are with, you know, the Tijuana cartel. You have some who will align with, you know, various Sinaloa groups. You'll have some in Texas who are aligned with Zetas and some who are aligned with whatever. And even though they're the same gang, they're going to ultimately, you know, regionally operate on behalf of these Mexico-based transnational criminal groups.
He is Brandon Darby. Brandon, I hate to ask because I didn't ask you beforehand. Feel free to say no. Do you think you could stay on? I just have a couple other quick questions I wanted to ask you.
I would love to.
All right. We will be right back. Brandon Darby, gonna dig into this stuff just a little bit more. Hang on.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday, digging into all things cartel, street gang, Tren de Aragua with my friend Brandon Darby, of course, of the Cartel Chronicles. If you're not reading the stuff Darby does, you just don't know. You don't know what's going on with the border and immigration and stuff like that. Okay, Brandon, so I want to ask about our own more traditional criminal organizations here and where they fit into all this. And more specifically, I want to ask about the Italian mafia. Where are they when it comes to working with the cartels, with street gangs? I know they contract out with street gangs to do killings, but I know there's also rivalries there. Or is the Italian mafia so shattered, it's just nothing? It's all cartel stuff now.
I think it's largely shattered. I think if we were to go up north, obviously there's probably, you know, trash or refuse rackets and construction rackets and all kinds of other things going on in New York City. And but you look at a city like Philadelphia, and they just got decimated, right? So, you know, Michael Francis, who's a former boss in the Italian mob, Italian American mob is a more accurate description.
Yeah, Chicago.
He talks about that, and they're just they decimated their way of life with, with RICO statutes. They decimated their way of life, and when people are facing life in prison or a nice cushy life on the witness protection program to tell on some other people, they generally tell on other people because people pick their wife and their kids over, you know, some chubby guy named Vito who kills people, right? They're always going to do that. And there's a couple of exceptions. I think Michael Francis's father didn't, but most of them will turn and become state's evidence. And they've just, the U.S. authorities decimated the mob. They're much more formal. But in that same sense, U.S. authorities have decimated some Mexican cartels, right? So if we look at Los Zetas, especially the Gulf cartel, are they powerful? Yeah, but really what they are is you have some factions of the Gulf cartel who work with the Sinaloa cartel. You have some factions who work with Los Zetas, you know, CDN. You have some factions who work with Cartel Jalisco. And even though these groups are at war with each other, sometimes different Gulf cartel groups are at war. And we've talked about this before, like for many years, U.S. border security, especially when it came to terrorism, really relied on this notion that these cartels would not allow transnational terrorists, right, like international terrorists to cross our border because they realized it would really shut down our border and ultimately hurt their ability to make profits with drugs. But then as the U.S. government and the Mexican government started going after the heads of these cartels, what they were left with is a bunch of young guys who don't care about tomorrow, don't care about long-term profit sustainability within their drug trade, who will just do whatever they can to make a quick buck today, and that makes for a very dangerous criminal organization when they don't care about tomorrow, when they have no concern for it because they're young and they're dumb and they're on cocaine or whatever they're doing. It makes for a very dangerous situation. So I think that's kind of, the mob being more formal. I kind of liken it back to wars in the past versus wars now. In the past, you know, if the leadership of a nation wanted to surrender, generally the nation surrendered. Nowadays, if the leadership wants to surrender, groups of people in the country don't care. It decentralizes. It takes the, you know, Irish Republican army model, and they break into splinter groups and still do attacks and terror attacks. And it doesn't matter what the formal government does. Well, with the Italian mob, it's been more like a formal government. They've kind of taken a back seat to things. With these groups from south of our border, the more you take out the leadership, the more fragmented these criminal groups become, and they don't stop.
So
like a hydra.
So we should leave the leadership alone?
No, I don't think we should leave the leadership alone. I'm in favor of doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling down, and just, it's like, you want to keep going, let's keep going. That's what I'm in favor of. I'm also in favor of looking at the root causes. I don't want to sound like Obama here, but looking at the things that lead people to this, right? Like, let's be really clear. When we fuel transnational criminal organizations in south of Texas, when we have policies that allow them to make hundreds of millions of dollars, right, and fuel themselves, these criminal groups, by bringing migrants to our border, or illegal aliens, or whatever the hell you want to call them, to our border, and we're fueling the very things that are causing people to flee in the first place, right, causing the corruption in the first place. When we do that, we are, in fact, exacerbating the problem. When we allow Mexico, when we try to treat Mexico, which is listed by all world bodies as a failing nation, or excuse me, a fragile state, not failing yet. It's one step above failing or failed. It's a fragile state that has over half of its territory under the control of transnational paramilitary criminal organizations, a nation that that when they want to do a federal police action, they have to use their military because these groups are so powerful with RPGs and every bit of weaponry that the Mexican government has. When we're dealing with that nation, if we continue to treat them like their government is somehow equal to us, like we deal with them like we're dealing with England or like UK, or like we're dealing with Canada, or like we're dealing with Japan, and we treat them that way, we are in fact turning a blind eye to them. So I'm in favor of being very aggressive. I'm in favor of not waiting for the approval of Mexico's drug cartel connected leadership and just doing what we need to do to protect our citizens in Mexico. Yep. That's where I come from. So I'm in a very different position. So no, I do not think that we should stop getting the heads of cartels. I do, however, think that we half measures are why we where we are. If we left them alone, we'd be better off than where we are. I think we'd be the best off long term if we took them out. But so to speak, you know, but the half measures is where the trouble really comes in.
Yeah, as is often the case. Brandon Darby, you are the best, my brother. Thank you so much. Come back. Join us soon. That was awesome. That was awesome. You know what we're going to need if we're going to take out the cartels? Testosterone. That's what, Chris? That's what we're going to need. You think you can be low T and take on the cartels? You can't. You need chalk in your life. We need a heaping helping of chalk dispersed throughout the military. Seriously, though, we all need testosterone, gentlemen. We all need energy. We all need focus. We all need to be in good moods. Do this naturally. Stop jamming needles in your arm. Natural herbal supplements. Whatever you're looking for improvement on in your life, you will find it at chalk.com. chok.com. Just go look at what they have. And get yourself a subscription. Use the promo code Jesse. You'll save a bunch of money. All right? Chuck.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
This is an iHeart podcast.